So if you would, let's be turning in our Bibles over to the book of Ecclesiastes, the book of Ecclesiastes, if you haven't done that already. And we will find ourselves today in the seventh chapter. And we've been systematically kind of working our way through this book. And as we've been working our way through this book, we haven't necessarily spent the kind of time that we would spend on maybe a New Testament book, as we tend to go sometimes kind of slow through those as we look at that nature. But I don't believe that this is the kind of book that lends us to that kind of study. I believe that this book is really trying to show us that of the futility of life apart from God in this world. And in the end, we'll eventually find out that nothing apart from living a life for God truly matters. Living a life, doing it our way, just doesn't make sense. It just leads to an end. But doing life God's way, that's the way that ends with true blessing. Now, we've been on quite a roll here lately as we've been looking at some different types of people who are living life, what Solomon says, under the sun, that is, apart from God. Solomon has been showing us in chapter 5 what he calls the sickness of following after wealth, that is to say, the love of money. When one is in love with money, that often brings with it a mental stress. It brings a physical toll upon the body. And in the end, that person who has all of the money, he dies just like the one who doesn't have any at all. In chapter 6, Solomon showed us two more types of kind of these extreme examples, so to say, of men that live under the sun. He showed us the man who had great wealth, but God had taken from him the ability to enjoy it. That is, as everybody seemed to be making a living off of this guy and enjoying his wealth, except for the man who had all of the wealth to begin with. He had no joy, no peace at all. And the second man of chapter 6 was the man who had 100 children and lived a long life, maybe even 1,000 years or 2,000 years, but in the end, no one wanted anything to do with him. Even his own kids wouldn't bear him. Now that was a sad man. As a matter of fact, Solomon said that is a man who's wasted life so much that it would have been better off that he'd have been born dead. That's the kind of people that we've been looking at here as of late, and Solomon has really kind of shown us the worst of hearts of people that are seeking to live their life under the sun apart from God. Now, when we get to chapter 7 is a long chapter. There are 30 verses here. And to be honest, this chapter reads a little different than the chapters that we've looked at so far. So far, we've seen a little bit of narrative going on so far as he gives us these examples of different people. And here, for the lack of a better word, Solomon seems to be a little more proverby. A little more proverby in chapter 7. We know, of course, when we look at the book of Proverbs, it is a collection of sayings. And oftentimes you'll have one verse that is related to the next verse, but the next verse after that has no relation to what comes before it or after it. And that's what makes kind of Proverbs a difficult book to preach through, in at least verse by verse, because the context is all over the place. But this chapter has kind of the same feel. We kind of have a running theme, but it is a little more proverby in nature. Now, because of the length of this chapter, we are going to split this chapter into two parts. And I'm going to make today a little bit shorter of a part because Carla has something for us next door to go along with Greg's lesson. So we're going to leave a little extra time for that as well. And I think you'll enjoy that. So we're going to look at the first nine verses this morning. So if you would, let's read it together. It says, "A good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of one's birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. Surely oppression maketh the wise man mad, and a gift destroyeth the heart. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. Let's return to verse number 1. And it says, a good name is better than precious ointment, for the day of death, and the day of death, than the day of one's birth. I want us to think for just a moment about this ointment and what it is. This ointment that is mentioned here is a perfume. It is something to make someone smell better. Now, you might go to the store and you might go to some place like Walmart or Dollar General and you might find that cheap section of perfume, right? That cheap stuff. Now, perfume and cologne, they typically throw me into a headache pretty fast, so I try to avoid them as much as possible. But I do use aftershave, that watered-down version, of course, of cologne. It goes away pretty quick. And even at that, when you go to Dollar General, they have that $6 bottle of Brut, and then they have the $3 knockoff version of the Dollar General, and I'm going to grab the Dollar General version every single time, and that bottle will last for a month, maybe even two. But in this verse, understand, we're not talking about that cheap stuff. We're not talking about that cheap ointment. This is not some water that has had rose petals setting in it. This is precious ointment. This is the expensive stuff. And not even as we think of the expensive stuff, the stuff you might go to Macy's or Nordstrom's or something of that nature and spend a couple of $100 for. You know, some of you ladies might do that. Maybe, I don't think you men do. Maybe some of y'all do. Joe might. He's kind of that type. But I don't know. But you ladies, you might do that. You might go out and spend a couple of $100 on some Eau de Toilette. But I'm just going to tell you, if you smell that bad, you should take a shower. It's cheaper and you'll save yourself some money, right? But again, even that $200 bottle of Chanel is nothing to what is being spoken of here by Solomon. Do you remember the incident that took place with Jesus not long before his betrayal? In Mark chapter 14, verse 3, which means we're going to get there one of these days, it says, and being in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at meat, there came a woman having an alabaster box of ointment of a spikenard, very precious, and she brake the box and poured it on his head. And there were some that had indignation within themselves and said, why was this waste of ointment made? For it might have 300 pence and have been given to the poor, and murmured against her. By the way, we are told in the Gospel of John was Mary, the sister of Martha. But here you see that precious ointment was valued at 300 pence. Now, that was about a year's wage for the average person. A year's worth of money. So this precious ointment is a luxury. This precious ointment is something that is not wasted on just any occasion. This is something you would say perhaps when someone died to anoint that body with. So here in Ecclesiastes in chapter 7, that's the kind of precious ointment that we're talking about. Something of great value, something of great worth, something that is not squandered or wasted. When you have a spikenard of this material, it is money in the bank. It is something that can always be sold to someone else for money. Now, the man that we begin with in chapter 7 is very different from the man that we saw in chapter 6, the man who fathered so many and lived so many years, and yet at the end, no one wanted anything to do with him. You see, that man did not die with a good name. Even his own children didn't think he had a good name. But this man has a good name. And his good name is more precious than wealth or this ointment, this precious ointment. That's the underlying thought. His name is more precious than wealth. Perhaps you've known people just like that. Maybe they did not have a lot of money on this earth, as many of us maybe not don't have, but maybe if you go out and you mention that person's name somewhere, you mention his name somewhere or his name somewhere, and people will begin to tell you stories. Stories of how that person stopped and helped them out when they were broken down beside the road, or when they went to the gas station and started pumping gas and they didn't realize they had their wallet, and this person maybe bailed them out and gave them a little bit of money enough to pay for their gas. Or maybe this was the kind of person that helped their kids whenever their kids were in trouble. Let's just face it. We all, you know, appreciate somebody that'll help out our kids like nobody else. But whatever it was, whatever acts they were, the person didn't necessarily have any kind of physical wealth, but they cared about other people, and it shows. They were honest. They were just the salt of the earth kind of people. You know what I'm talking about. And when that person dies, when that person with that good name dies, what happens is when they have that funeral, people show up. People show up to pay their last respects, and they'll tell stories just like that as they're waiting in line to pay their last respects and give hugs to their widows and things of that nature. Maybe you know that guy. And maybe perhaps you are that guy or you are that woman. And you know what? Knowing you all, I think you are. I think you're that kind of people. And if someone said to you, would you rather have $1 million in the bank and a bad name, or would you rather die just an average Joe with a good name? I think most of you would say, keep your money. Keep your money. I'd rather die the average Joe. That's the kind of fellow that Solomon is speaking of here. Solomon says, when it comes to the man who dies with a good name, the day of his death is better than the day of his birth. You think, how in the world can that be? I want you to think about something for just a moment. Think about your children. I'll tell you a little bit about mine. But you know, when Heather and I had our children, there was a lot of happiness. Turns out, you know, Heather and I were pretty happy. The people around us were happy. We had grandparents and aunts and uncles, and we even had a few friends to come and celebrate their arrival. And those were joyous times, but in the grand spectrum of things, there was not a lot of people whose lives were truly affected by their births. Again, it was a joyous occasion to us and certainly to their grandparents and those close relatives. But, you know, my children weren't bringing joy to the people in the restaurant that were picking up their mess on the floor. They weren't bringing, you know, happiness to the people that we would meet out in the places that we would drag them to, and we drug them all over the place. Why? Because our children had no impact on their lives whatsoever. But you know what? As our children grow, and Lord willing, as they seek to establish a good name for themselves, they begin to have a real impact on other people. And from the outside, you watch them and you see the difference that they begin to make in the lives of other people for the better. And as I say that, I'm always somehow reminded of that old movie, It's a Wonderful Life, and the impact old George Bailey had on all those others because he was seeking to do what was right and what was good. That's what Solomon is speaking about here. When you have sought out living a life of goodness, then there is an impact on the world around you. And when you die, there'll be many more that mourn you than ever welcomed your birth. That's what he is speaking about here. Your impact on the world was very little when you were born. Your impact on the world when you leave, that's what is of value. And that is what allows one at the end of his life or her life to have that good name. That is what was missing from the man in the last chapter with 100 kids in 1,000 years or 1,000 more. There was no one there to mourn him because he had never established that good name. Now let's read on in verse number 2. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For that is the end of all men, and the living will lay it to his heart. The house of mourning is speaking about going to maybe what we would think of as a funeral today. Of course, in this day and time, there were no funeral homes of that nature, and people would come to the homes of those that had lost loved ones, and they would come to give their condolences and mourn with them, and they would mourn with them in these cultures, not just for a day or two, they would mourn for days with them. They would be there by their side. And is that not the very picture that we have when we see Jesus coming to be with Mary and Martha 4 days after Lazarus was dead? There were people that were there still mourning with them. Their house, the house of Martha, you know, Martha was a lady that loved to serve. Their house had been a house of feasting and celebration on many different occasions. But their house had become a house of mourning when Lazarus died. Now, if I were to ask everyone the question here, today after services, would you rather go to a birthday party or a funeral? I think everybody's going to opt for the birthday party, aren't they? That's what we would think. That's what we'd rather do. No one likes to go to a funeral unless they have to. But Solomon here is teaching us that there is a value to the funeral home. There's a value in walking to the graveyard. There's a value in going down to the house of mourning over the house of feasting and celebration. Sure, you might like to go to a birthday party or a wedding celebration and have a good time and eat a lot of good food and have some good cake. Laugh a little bit and tell a few stories, but when you leave that birthday party, when you leave that feast and you go back to your home, you're the same person you were when you left. Nothing about you has changed. I've never been to a birthday party or a wedding celebration that changed my life. Well, apart from my own wedding, that changed my life. But understand, it was not the reception that changed it. The vows were just the same, whether we would have had the party or not. Just less pictures in the album, right? But there is a value in going down to the house of mourning that can change a person forever. And that's why Solomon says, the living will lay it to his heart. The one that goes down to the house of mourning sees the brevity of life. Whether one lived a few days or many, they begin to see the old reality and what's coming. And they begin to think to themselves what life is truly all about. They begin to evaluate where they stand before others. Will I die with a good name? Not only will I die with a good name, but what about my eternity? How do I stand before God? The wise man will go down to the house of mourning and begin to ponder their own eternity. I've never heard of a single person saved at a birthday party. But I have seen with mine own eyes people confess Christ at a funeral. I've seen people come to the grips with the fact that the only hope that they will ever have of seeing a loved one again is through Jesus Christ. You see, nothing causes the living to evaluate his own life more than going down to the house of mourning to mourn the one they love. And maybe you've seen those kinds of things play out before your own eyes as well. And maybe perhaps that person has been you. Let's read on. Verse number 3. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by the sadness of the countenance, the heart is made better. We could look at this verse in the context of the last verse. We can laugh at a party, but all that comedy in the world, all the comedy in the world does not change a man's direction in life. We've already seen that in this book. That laughter brings no lasting meaning to a person's life. No matter how many times you watch Daddy Daycare, it's not going to change your life for the better. But here again, we are shown that in those times of sadness, the heart is made better. Here, Solomon is not trying to say there's happiness in grieving, but rather those times of sorrow and grieving are what causes us to be better people in the long run. Better people in the long run. Really, if we could summarize what Solomon is teaching to us in this verse and even the next verse, he's basically saying this, that we learn more from trials than we do for pleasure. We learn more through trials than we do in pleasure. And I imagine most of you can look back on your life and see that very thing in its fullness. Even as something as simple as learning a sport or maybe soccer or volleyball or tennis or whatever it is, you know, to get good at something, to make oneself better, you have to go through the adversity of training. It's not fun to run until you're ready to puke, is it? No one likes that. But it makes you better. Spiritually, we often talk about the highs of this life being those mountaintop experiences, but and as much as we're thankful for those experiences, and we love those experiences and look forward to them, we realize that our spiritual growth comes from the struggle of the climb and not being set on the mountaintop. That is what Solomon is trying to teach to us in these Proverbs. Verse number 4, it says, "The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of the fools is in the house of mirth." Our verses here are not saying that there's anything wrong with celebrating. That's not Solomon's goal. It's not saying that there's anything wrong with laughter, because there's not. Our verses are just speaking about the fact that those things come easy. Laughter and joy, those are easy things, but they don't make us a better person on the inside. This verse in particular is just saying the same thing that we've seen already. A wise person will grow in times of trouble, in times of sorrow, in times of mourning. A fool, though, is always going to seek to find happiness where the good times roll. And laughter is easy. And he can go home and not feel convicted about where he stands in life, before man or before God. Now, our next verse is also about growing. Kind of through adversity, but through a way that most of us don't really like. Look here, in verse number 5. It says, "It is better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools." I love that, the song of fools. Solomon tells us something that we know, but we don't necessarily like. It is better for us to hear the criticisms of those that know something than to be celebrated by a bunch of people who just want to slap you on the back and say, "Good job, buddy, good job." Sometimes I think of someone like Tiger Woods. And despite what you think of him, you know, he's had quite a career in golf. Few people have accomplished the things that he's accomplished. You know, Tiger Woods has coaches. Coaches that mentor him and tell him what he's doing wrong. Could you imagine being the guy that has to tell Tiger Woods you're doing it wrong? I mean, you'd think he'd just turn around and say, "Well, you do better, buddy." Right? But yet he listens to these people because he knows that it's a good thing. It's much better to be told by them what he's doing wrong than someone to slap him on the back and say, "Looks great to me." Telling someone that they're doing a good job is the easy thing to do, but it's not always the best for them. You ever heard someone take the stage that thought they could sing? I'm not talking about me. I already know I can't. But I'm talking about those that kind of get up there and maybe on karaoke night or whatever, and they think they can sing because people have just told them good job when they couldn't carry a tune in a bucket if they tried. It would be better for someone to tell them the truth and to grow from that wise counsel. Become a DJ instead. I don't know. But we should look at the advice of others who know, and a wise man will grow from that and not be hurt. Not be hurt. To look at it not as criticism, but wise counsel to make us better. And sometimes that wise counsel, again, is hard to swallow because we think sometimes we're doing our best, and let's just face it, sometimes we're not. But a wise man will grow from that instruction. It's much better to hear than the song of fools. Look here in verse number 6. I love the imagery here. It says, "For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool, and this also is vanity." Most of you all have probably started a fire at some point in your life, or maybe you've even made a campfire, right? Out in the woods, you've camped out and you've made a campfire. And you know that when you first start that campfire and you don't have those fancy, you know, pre-soaked bricks that light up right away and things of that nature, but you're actually going to make the fire yourself, and you go out and you gather the twigs and the dry stubble and things of that nature, and you light that and you get it going, and you can hear the little crackling and popping of the twigs and everything. That's the imagery that we see here. But when you get that fire first lit and it's going just a little bit, now is not the time to put the pot on the fire, is it? Even if you had a nice grate over top those twigs, you could put your kettle of water over that grate and you'll never boil the water. Why? Because there's not enough heat to do the job. To boil the water, you got to build up the fire. You got to get it going. It's only when you've got enough heat that the job can be accomplished. Solomon says the same is with the laughter of fools. Those guys that sing the songs and slap you on the back and tell you you've done such a great job. What they say sounds good, but you can't cook on the fire that they're building because it burns out too fast. There's no sustenance in it. Oh, my friends, May God grant us the wisdom to know the difference in the sounds of crackling thorns under a pot and the true heat of wisdom that is given by the counsel of the wise. Let's read on. Verse number 7. Surely oppression maketh the wise man mad, and a gift destroyeth the heart. We have two phrases here in this verse that are certainly related to one another. One describes the way of the wise and the other the way of the fool. In some debate on how to best translate the word oppression, some say it should be translated extortion. Some stick with oppression, but the idea is either that someone is trying to bribe the wise man or oppress the wise man to get what he wants, but the wise man knows what he's up to. The wise man looks at the bribe and knows what it is and knows what is trying to be done, and he will not be fooled. It will drive him mad that you would try to get this over on him. But the fool, though, will look at that Trojan horse that sits at the city gates and roll it right into the city. You know all those little pop-up things that come up on your computer and say you've just won a $100 Amazon card and you click it and you get the virus? They call those a Trojan horse for a reason. The promise of a gift causes some people to lose their minds. As the ancient Roman poet Virgil once wrote, "Beware of Greeks bringing gifts." When someone starts treating you differently out of the blue and bringing you a gift, there might be more to the story. Let's read on. Couple more verses. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof, and the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. And this gets us back to some degree what we said in the beginning. When we were born, we are incapable of anything, really. Our impact on this world is very little. As we listen to wise counsel and we grow in wisdom, then our end becomes greater than our start. The one who is patient in spirit is the one who has grown through those times of trouble, grown through those times of tribulation. That person has grown through the school of hard knocks and they came out far better than the one who assumes they know it all. In verse number 9, one more. Be not hasty in thy spirit to be angry, for anger resteth in the bosom of fools. Simply put, a foolish man is one who is quick to anger, and a wise man is one who is slow to wrath. No one shows their foolishness faster than someone who gets angry quickly over the smallest of things. Every time you see them ranting, you know exactly which one they are. Now we're leaving off right in the middle, so to say, of this discussion. It was a hard place to try to find a stopping point because of the way these verses are timed. But verse number 10, I do want to spend a little more extended period of time with next time. So that's why we're going to stop here. But as we look back on what we have read today, let us ask ourselves the questions that Solomon is trying to help us realize today. Are we seeking to live a life with a good name more than the gains of this earth? Will people mourn us when we die because we've made a difference in the lives of others for good? Are we learning from the trials of this earth to be better people? Can we tell the difference between the words of the wise that are seeking to help us become better than the wise of the foolish that have no value? Are we learning to guard our mouths in peace or lashing out in anger? Solomon wrote these words about 3,000 years ago. And as I read through this chapter, it's everyone here, because man's nature has not changed, not one bit. Let's back.